Pro-Life to the Max is produced and broadcast by WOMB 89.9 FM Catholic Radio in Bloomington, Indiana.
Ave Maria, welcome to Pro-Life to the Max, a weekly half-hour radio program under the patronage of St. Maximilian Mary Kolbe that is dedicated to keeping you informed on local, state, and national pro-life issues and efforts and inspiring you to get involved. I'm Monica Siefker, happy and blessed to be here with you today, along with my co-host and companion for life, Rhonda Branham. Thanks for joining us. Well, last week we started to tackle the subject of euthanasia and physician-assisted suicide. We spent most of the time laying out the history of the movement here in the U.S. and showed how the culture of death is content to work in incremental steps to achieve its goals. Today, we'll continue our discussion on what many call the right to die movement, and we'll bring in what the church has to say about it. Is the euthanasia movement really based on choice and compassion, as its advocates insist? Or does it have more to do with deciding who and who is not worthy to live? We'll also get into one of the biggest stumbling blocks of our faith, the mystery of the cross and redemptive suffering, and how the secularization of society has made the outlook on suffering amenable to the acceptance of euthanasia. But first things first, Rhonda's going to start us off in a prayer taken from Pope St. John Paul II's The Gospel of Life.
O Mary, bright dawn of the new world, Mother of the living, to you do we entrust the cause of life. Look down, O Mother, upon the vast numbers of babies not allowed to be born, of the poor whose lives are made difficult, of men and women who are victims of brutal violence, of the elderly and the sick, killed by indifference or out of misguided mercy. Grant that all who believe in your Son may proclaim the gospel of life with honesty and love to the people of our time. Obtain for them the grace to accept that gospel as a gift ever new, the joy of celebrating it with gratitude throughout their lives, and the courage to bear witness to it resolutely in order to build, together with all people of goodwill, the civilization of truth and love to the praise and glory of God, the Creator and Lover of life. And now, this week's In the News.
A bill sponsored by U.S. House and Senate Democrats was introduced this past Tuesday that would force healthcare providers to participate in abortion, assisted suicide, and euthanasia against their consciences. The legislation would eliminate the new conscience protection rule for medical professionals that the Trump administration finalized earlier this year. U.S. Representative Barbara Lee of California, one of the bill's sponsors, claimed that Trump's conscience protections permit doctors and nurses to discriminate against patients. Our bill will ensure that no one is denied the care they need based on a provider's personal beliefs, because the only thing that should dictate patient care is what's best for the patient, Lee stated. A recent court decision struck down the administration's pro-life conscience protection, putting healthcare providers at risk for being forced to do abortions or make referrals for them. The bill introduced this past Tuesday seeks to make the court's ruling permanent. And according to the Christian Broadcasting Network, a recent fundraiser event for Planned Parenthood saw drag queen performers in the state of Washington mocking pro-life activists and local Christian pastors by parading around in cardboard cutouts of their faces to raise donations. The Planned Parenthood fundraiser was organized by a group called Spokane United Against Religious Extremism. The mockers held up effigies of Christian pro-life advocates as they lined the stage in a manner that some said resembled a simulated slave auction. It's reported that the group raised nearly $2,000 for Planned Parenthood. One of the Christian activists that was derided at the event said, "Both Planned Parenthood and drag queens dehumanize, exploit, terrorize, and commit violence against women. Abortion is violence against women and their babies, and drag is a misogynistic mockery of women." And Massachusetts is set to join California in making the abortion pill available in all of its public state universities. According to Live Action News, abortions up to 10 weeks would be covered financially through a trust fund set up for the program with money approved through the state's legislature. Massachusetts is one of the few states that allows taxpayer dollars to be spent on abortion. If passed, the bill will allocate $400,000 to public university health centers for initial medical abortion readiness and up to $2.4 million for the day-to-day cost, including staff salaries. And Christian, Jewish, and Islamic leaders presented a signed declaration to Pope Francis expressing their complete opposition to euthanasia and any form of physician-assisted suicide. The idea for the joint statement came from an Israeli medical ethicist who proposed the idea to the Pope. The Holy Father entrusted the project to the Pontifical Academy for Life, which then organized an interreligious committee to create the document. At the heart of the proclamation was the affirmation that the direct, deliberate, and intentional taking of human life through euthanasia or assisted suicide is morally and religiously wrong and should be forbidden without exception. And finally, 17 unborn children were killed by either surgical or chemical abortions this past Thursday at the Bloomington Planned Parenthood. Women from Kentucky, Ohio, and various Hoosier counties came to 421 South College Avenue to have their unborn child killed as sidewalk advocates and prayer partners reached out to them offering love and help. Planned Parenthood was back at abortion counseling right away as Friday morning saw several women coming in scheduling abortion appointments for next Thursday. Please keep these abortion-minded women and their unborn babies in your prayers. And that's your weekly in the news. So last week, Rhonda, we spoke intensively about the history of the euthanasia movement here in the U.S., but there was one pivotal story that we didn't have a chance to get to, and this incident was important because it catapulted the right to die issue into the national spotlight, fed by people's sympathy and genuine concern for a beautiful young lady who had been diagnosed with an aggressive brain cancer and was given only months to live. That young lady's name was Brittany Maynard, and after hearing her tragic story, millions across the country and the world were led to believe that she should indeed have a right to take her own life and control her own death in the way that she saw fit.
Well, Brittany, a 29-year-old married woman from California, had been enduring severe headaches when she found out that she's had the most deadly form of brain cancer known. She was given 6 months to live. Almost immediately, Brittany decided to move to Oregon in order to take advantage of their Death with Dignity Act. Euthanasia advocacy groups like Compassion and Choices quickly seized the opportunity to make Brittany a poster child for the movement. Taking advantage of Brittany's natural good looks, her affability, and her speaking talents, euthanasia supporters rallied around the young woman and encouraged her in her role as the nation's new euthanasia spokesperson in order to push their agenda. In a video, Brittany said, "The outpouring of kindness that I have received since my story went public has been astounding. You've helped put the Death with Dignity movement in the hearts and minds of millions of Americans. All across the country, lawmakers have reached out saying that they want to introduce legislation to authorize aid in dying. That is real progress towards change."
Yeah, again, this was such a sad case, no doubt about it, but there was some very misguided compassion involved. And while many were supporting Brittany in her decision to take her own life, there were also pro-life groups and other cancer patients who encouraged Brittany to embrace the beautiful gift of life to the very last moment. They also were there to remind her how it is often through the most bitter sufferings of our lives that we are able to come to know our family, our friends, and God Himself more intimately than we could have ever imagined. One Connecticut woman by the name of Maggie Carner even made a public video addressed to Brittany, begging her not to take her own life. Maggie happened to be suffering from the very same cancer that Brittany had. Let's take a listen to part of Maggie's heartfelt and beautiful plea, which comes by way of the Family Institute of Connecticut.
Hi, Brittany. My name is Maggie Carner. I live in Connecticut. And just like many Americans, I saw your heartbreaking video. And as I watched, my tears quickly turned to sobs because you and I have one big thing in common. I was also diagnosed this past spring with a glioblastoma grade 4 brain tumor. So your video hit pretty close to home for me. The other night I couldn't sleep, so I decided to write this letter to you. Dear Brittany, honestly, I really do get it. I'm a strong woman, just like you, and I understand the horrible fear that you're facing. the scary predictions of what will happen, the loss of control. Even the stupid name of that tumor sounds just as ominous today as it did when I first heard that word in the doctor's office. Remember earlier this year when Robin Williams took his own life? The shock, all the remembrances on TV. The world lost some of its beauty and joy that day. Brittany, if you take your life, the world will lose some of its beauty again. Your video was seen by tons of people around the world. Every day, millions of people, including me, are lifting you up in prayer for your peace and healing. And because of that video, we are all of us are feeling your loss and pain. As a nation, we're all walking right alongside with you. No one is judging, but people are watching. Because your video was so popular, someone told me it's almost like you've stepped out on a ledge and you're ready to jump. But when that happens in real life, we try to talk to that person and we say, no, don't jump. We try to explain to them why they're valuable, why we want them here longer. We tell them that there can be a better way. But what would happen if our society decided to yell to that ledge jumper, yeah, you're right, there isn't a better way. Go ahead, jumping is the best solution for you. What would that say about us as a society? So I guess I'm yelling to you, Brittany, on your ledge. I'm asking you to stay with us as long as possible. When I was a young woman, just a few years older than you, my dad suffered a severe accident and it severed his spinal cord and it left him paralyzed from the neck down. And during those months, our family had precious time just soaking up the presence of my dad. He couldn't do anything except talk. And quite frankly, I never had that kind of candor and intimacy with my dad before those days. My brothers and sisters and I, we learned more about ourselves and each other than we ever could have in any other way. We grew as a family and we learned about sacrifice and love. Each of us became wiser and better people through that whole experience. So really, in essence, it was a gift that my dad gave to us. Brittany, I ask that you allow your family this gift of caring for you in your cancer journey. So Brittany, please don't leave us yet. Let's choose life for as long as we've got it. L'chaim, to life.
Well, in a culture that values life only to the extent that it brings pleasure, and where suffering is viewed as something that one must be freed from at all cost, Maggie Karner is certainly a breath of fresh air. It was 5 years ago this month, on November 1st, 2014, that Brittany Maynard took her own life. These were some of her final words. "Goodbye to all my dear friends and family that I love. Today is the day I have chosen to pass away with dignity in the face of my terminal illness, this terrible brain cancer that has taken so much from me, but would have taken so much more." Well, as a result of the national exposure that Brittany's assisted suicide garnered, several states have now taken up the crusade to sanction euthanasia in their legislatures. Eternal rest grant unto Brittany, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon her.
Amen. Monica, Brittany's words and situation remind me of some of Pope St. John Paul II's passages in his encyclical, The Gospel of Life. Here's what he wrote. "In a social and cultural context, which makes it more difficult to face and accept suffering, the temptation becomes all the greater to resolve the problem of suffering by eliminating it at the root, by hastening death so that it occurs at the moment considered most suitable. Various considerations usually contribute to such a decision, all of which converge in the same terrible outcome. In the sick person, the sense of anguish, of severe discomfort, and even of desperation brought on by intense and prolonged suffering can be a decisive factor. Such a situation can threaten the already fragile equilibrium of an individual's personal and family life, with the result that on the one hand, the sick person, despite the help of increasingly effective medical and social assistance, risks feeling overwhelmed by his or her own frailty. And on the other hand, those close to the sick person can be moved by an understandable, even if misplaced, compassion. All this is aggravated by a cultural climate which fails to perceive any meaning or value in suffering, but rather considers suffering the epitome of evil, to be eliminated at all cost. This is especially the case in the absence of a religious outlook, which could help to provide a positive understanding of the mystery of suffering.
As always, some great stuff there from the late pontiff, and he just nails it. In order to have a culture of life, we need life himself. It is he alone who gives meaning to life, death, and suffering. So we've got our work cut out for us in bringing this gospel of life to the many strayed and indifferent souls, as our patron Saint Maximilian said. And not only do we have this move towards euthanasia and physician-assisted suicide because of this desire to end the sufferings of ourselves or others, we're also dealing with utilitarian motives for it as well. And that's the dirty little secret. We mentioned on the last show that as far back as 1938, the end goal of the Euthanasia Society of America was to get the public to accept the right to kill the incurables, the so-called mentally defectives, the severely handicapped, and malformed babies. But they said voluntary euthanasia would have to come first. And this is precisely what is happening. And let's take the Netherlands as an example. Remember, it was the first country to legalize voluntary assisted suicide back in 2002. Well, just over 10 years later, in 2013, it was reported that 650 babies, and those are born babies, they were killed because parents or doctors deemed their conditions or disabilities as being not worthy to live. The legalization of assisted suicide opens up a Pandora's box to justify all kinds of killing. And we're finding out that those who are disabled or mentally compromised are prime targets for euthanasia. Now, the word compassion comes from the Latin words cum, meaning with, and patsy, meaning suffer. So literally, to suffer with. When we are truly compassionate, we will suffer with another by accepting their condition, taking care of them, loving them in the midst of their pain. That's all going to involve a death to our own self, as well as some suffering. The easy thing is to do away with those who are ill or dying or severely handicapped or mentally ill and so on. That's why euthanasia is so attractive to many. It's a fatally false compassion.
And Monica, there was a case a few years ago that involved an Irish man with a degenerative motor neuron disease that illustrates perfectly what you are talking about. And that displayed the harsh reality that economics and utilitarianism plays in deciding who lives and dies. Well, this man made headlines around the world when he came forward to say that he was being heavily pressured by the medical community to refuse the ventilator that was keeping him alive. The man had been admitted to an intensive care unit for pneumonia, and it was there that a doctor told him that it was time that he start making some hard choices. The medical community was telling him that having the ventilator at home was too costly, and they just couldn't understand why he even wanted to go on living with such a tough disease. His answer to all of them was this: "What makes me want to continue to live? Love for my wife, love for my children, my friends, my family, love for life in general. My love is undimmed, unbowed, unbroken. I want to live. Is that wrong? Motor neuron disease is a killer, but so is life. Everybody dies. But just because you die, just because you will die at some point in the future, does that mean you should kill yourself now? For me, they were asking me to take my own life or to endorse euthanasia. I refused.
And these scenarios are not uncommon. In fact, it's a growing trend, according to euthanasia prevention watchdogs. So much of the culture is governed by this situational ethics philosophy, and so many of the world's healthcare systems are giving rise to utilitarian-based decision-making. Hospital bioethics committees are routinely withdrawing treatments that could save lives or withholding food and water. That's passive euthanasia. This stuff is going on all the time. In countries that have legalized euthanasia, data shows that a high percentage of killings are committed without the request or the consent of the patient or family. Patients with Alzheimer's disease or dementia are being killed, even as some of them instinctively fight to stay alive as the lethal injection is given, or they are simply not given food or water to drink, and then they die a horrific death.
Well, why don't we take a look at some of those statistics, Monica, and get a feel for how widespread assisted suicide is in the United States. I know we mentioned on the last show that assisted suicide is legal in 9 states, plus in the District of Columbia. 39 states currently have a ban on assisted suicide, including Indiana. However, there has been a big push in recent years to change that, as we keep mentioning. In this year's legislative assemblies, bills were introduced in 15 states to try to get assisted suicide legalized. They succeeded in getting it done in New Jersey, unfortunately. Companion bills promoting assisted suicide were introduced in both the Indiana House and Senate earlier this year. State Representative Matt Pierce, a Democrat from right here in Bloomington, authored House Bill 1184. Representative Pierce is working hard to try and get assisted suicide legal in Indiana. Fortunately, he keeps running into roadblocks in the Republican-controlled legislature. Neither the House nor the Senate euthanasia bills received a hearing earlier this year. The Indiana Catholic Conference, the Indiana Alliance Against Assisted Suicide, and the Indiana State Medical Association all lobbied against the bills. No doubt, Mr. Pierce and his supporters will keep trying to legalize physician-assisted suicide here in Indiana, so it's very important for us to remain vigilant.
Mm-hmm. Currently, it's difficult to find good statistics on how many people are dying from assisted suicide in the U.S. The Charlotte Lozier Institute gives us a glimpse, however, into the numbers when it reports on the 2017 death counts in the state of Oregon, again, the first state to have legalized assisted physician suicide. According to the Institute, in 2017, there were 218 lethal prescriptions written, and 143 patients died from these drugs. Of course, that leaves us wondering what happened to those 75 prescriptions that didn't result in death. Did the person not end up taking the drug? Did they take it and survive? Do they even know if these drugs are still in the hands of the person who had requested them? There are no reported answers, and that should scare us. The Lozier Institute also reported that the annual increase in physician-assisted suicide deaths has accelerated in the last 4 years, with almost twice as many suicides in 2017 as in 2013. Since 1998, 1,275 Oregonians have ended their lives by assisted suicide. Interestingly enough, the law does not allow these deaths to be recorded as suicides. And as of 2014, Oregon had a suicide rate 43% higher than the national average. Researchers have found that the general suicide rate goes up when assisted suicide is legalized, and nothing surprising here.
Further analysis of the 2017 Oregon data shows that about 77% of the patients had various forms of cancer. Others had chronic conditions with a less predictable trajectory toward death, such as cardiac and respiratory conditions, neurological conditions like Lou Gehrig's disease, and even metabolic conditions like diabetes. And what were some of the reasons given by the patients for asking for the drug to kill themselves? Well, it turns out that the prospect of dying in excruciating pain ranked low on the list. Only 21% cited this concern. The most common reason was being less able to engage in activities that make life enjoyable. 88% listed that as their main reason for wanting to end their lives. Losing autonomy was another big reason at 87%. and loss of dignity came in at 67%. It was noted that the most significant change from past years was that 55% of the patients said that they were obtaining the lethal dose because they were a burden on family, friends, or caregivers, compared to an average of 42% in the past.
So were these deaths quick and painless? Well, at least two patients endured seizures after taking the drugs, and at least 25 regurgitated some of the dose. 7 regained consciousness and ended up dying later of natural causes. There is no record of anyone choosing to go through assisted suicide a second time if they did survive the first time. In 2017, patients took as long as 21 hours to die and as long as 4 hours to lose consciousness, figures which indicate that it is taking longer for the drugs to have their effect than in past years.
And there are plenty of horror stories that have come out about botched attempts at physician-assisted suicide, just like there are also many botched attempts at abortion, where the baby destined to be killed is actually not. Life Issues Institute has some of these tales. A 42-year-old Oregon resident by the name of David Pruitt took the prescribed lethal medication with his family by his side. David was unconscious for 65 hours and then woke up unscathed. In another case, a patient took the lethal medication but then began to exhibit physical symptoms that alarmed his wife, who then called 911. An ambulance took him to a local hospital where they revived him. After this, he was transferred to a nursing home where his disease eventually claimed his life. In one study of physician-assisted suicides in the United States, it was reported that the process failed 15% of the time. There was also a documented case in Oregon that when an assisted suicide attempt failed, a family member took things into his own hands and helped the patient to die. We are left wondering just what that entailed. Aside from these failed assisted suicide attempts, numerous other problems have been reported, like when a patient has severe adverse reactions to the drugs. These incidents always horrify and traumatize family and friends. So again, it's not the peaceful and serene death they were told would happen. It was also documented that one patient actually took a total of 104 hours to die. The Compassion and Choices Executive Director of Oregon said that in this case, the doctors we talked to said it's likely she just had a very strong heart.
Proof that as much as we like to think that we are in control, we are not. Let's end with one final story, again from a resident of Oregon who had voted in favor of the Death with Dignity Act when it was on the state's ballot in 1994, because she intended to make use of it should the need ever arise. Well, when Jeanette Hall was 55 years old, she was diagnosed with inoperable colon cancer and given 6 months to live. The doctors presented her with two options, radiation and chemotherapy to try to fight the cancer, or to take a lethal dose of barbiturates to end her life. Hall says that she wanted the easy way out and asked for the dose. However, one of her cancer doctors, an opponent himself of assisted physician suicide, was there to try to dissuade her. Hall said that she just didn't want to go on living because she was divorced and had just lost her mother to dementia and her brother to suicide. But Dr. Stevens kept at her, letting her know that life is worth living and hoping to convince her to change her mind, which she finally did. 15 years later, in 2015, Hall was still alive, celebrating her 70th birthday.
Such a hopeful and beautiful story. And yet another reminder that God is in control, not us. Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 39 says, "See now that I myself am He. There is no God besides me. I put to death and I bring to life. I have wounded and I will heal, and no one can deliver out of my hand." God alone is the author of life and death. Well, we've got still lots more to talk about on this subject, particularly as it concerns living wills and advance directives, and the question, how does a Catholic prepare for a good and holy death? Well, we'll talk about that the next time. Until then, let us heed the warning of St. Maximilian Mary Kolbe that the most deadly poison of our time is indifference. Let's pray for one another that we may be consumed with the desire to save lives and souls, to give the greatest possible honor and glory to God. Ave Maria.
Ave Maria.
Thank you for listening to Pro-Life to the Max, a production of WOMB Catholic Radio. To learn more about this program and how you can help us to continue to produce and broadcast this content, visit us online at WOMBradio.com.